issue around the skills audit for board members. I didn't want to say, I just want to mention that the skills audit that's been conducted is for staff and not necessarily for board members. What was done for board members is in terms of what we are required to do in terms of governance processes, is to do a performance assessment of both the board as well as the committees, because the board and obviously the minister has an interest in making sure that the board is delivering in terms of what they are required to do. So speaking on that, the question that was asked by Honorable Kopano around the budgets. So the governance workshop that was done by KPMG, it was for 120,000. And that was for the entire board and, including the secretariat and senior management. The budget for the assessment, the performance assessment of the board and its committees, as well as the peer reviews of all board members, that also costed around 190,000. And then on issues around the organizational redesign, the consultation processes, I am pleased to inform this committee chairperson the fact that the board appointed a task team of the board that is overseeing the OG process. The task team of the board, under it, there is a project steering committee, which we refer to as the ODPSC. The project steering committee, I am chairperson of the committee, and that committee is representative of all stakeholders or all departments within the CIDB. So we have about 5 departments within CIDB, and there are representatives from each department as well as NHAU in that committee. So that committee reports directly to the board steering committee, who reports directly to the board. So we work closely with the agent that is helping us with the OD project, which is Work Dynamics. The cost implications in terms of what the reshuffling and so forth will entail, we have not determined that as yet, because the reshuffling and maybe the changes in positions or grades is, or even the structure that will be recommended by the consultants will be based, what will be done is, one, the outcome of the skills audit will determine how much should then be spent on the training strategy to actually address the gaps that will be identified. And that will only be done at the end when the skills audit has been finalized and we have the result of that, and which is why we also incorporated a training strategy today. Once we've identified what gaps we have in the system, considering the fact that this must be based in terms of the new strategy and the new vision of the CIDB, we must then identify what gaps we have and how much it will cost us to actually make sure that we resource for those specific areas. And I think the chairperson also covered the issues around the digitalized services, Honorable Adams. But just to add on that is, part of the strategy in enhancing our services as the CIDB is to say, whilst we need to keep up with the technology trends and the systems, the fact that most people have got smartphones and they can have apps where they don't need to come and stand in queues at CIDB to register, we want to have facilities where people can sit at the comfort of their homes or offices and be able to register, be able to do their renewals. But we've also said those that cannot do that must still have access in terms of our offices. And what we want to focus on now is to have what we loosely refer to as business consultants, not just clerks who are going to register you, take documents and what, but they must be able to even advise in terms of business, in terms of other things that will assist in the development of contractors going forward. On the issue of particularly the problem around work opportunities and insofar as which committee of the board will look at this, insofar as even distribution is concerned, firstly, I think we need to bear in mind the fact that CIDP does not necessarily issue any work opportunities. But what CIDP does, we inform policies of government that relate to issues of procurement, best practices, the standards, the practice notes, insofar as they relate to infrastructure procurement and delivery management. So the specific committee that will then look at such policies will be the one that deals with registration and regulatory compliance, because it then falls under issues of regulatory compliance, where we look at what standards do we have in place and who is complying with them, and what can be enhanced for us to be able to deliver on issues that are affecting us. But also, what is key for us is the strategic partnerships, because then partnering with the likes of Treasury, for instance, we are able to have the strategic interventions that will address the specific concerns that are affecting our industry. On the issues around the four pillars, and in particular the one on transformation, and looking at the fact that if one looks at that register, it is hugely concentrated in the low levels, looking at about 90%, which is our grade ones. I think a couple of things here. The whole issue around the fact that there is now a committee that's going to focus on registration means that we also want to have closer focus insofar as grade one is concerned. We have recently done a study to assess grade ones and what kind of people are in grade one, and are they contractors or is it people from all walks of life, because currently our register is such that anyone can register as a contractor in our system, and that's predominantly our grade ones. So immediately someone can't find work or whatever, and they hear there is a registration process at CIDD as a grade one contractor, they can register. So we are in the process of trying to clean up the registration requirements, at least insofar as the entry levels are concerned. But this is not to say that we will start to put in measures that are not going to allow people to be able to register. But we need to have a cleaner process in terms of our requirements and what we actually look at, because that then will assist us in terms of coming up with developmental initiatives that are going to be able to assist the grade ones so that they can upgrade going forward. Also, this is one of the issues that we are discussing, even with Treasury, in terms of the new standard for infrastructure delivery, to say, how can we, as government, assist in packaging the contracts that are issued? Because there are small contracts for 200,000, 300,000 that can be done by the entry-level contractors, and we are looking at those packaging strategies in terms of how we make sure that there are those contractors that are earmarked predominantly for the lower level, so that they can be able to also access with opportunities. This also talks to the whole issue of subcontracting and what happens in the subcontracting arrangements. What we are currently looking at as the CIDP, in fact, is one of the agenda items for the board meeting tomorrow, because we have put forward a standard that seeks to regulate subcontracting arrangements in this industry. Because we have identified that, particularly in the lower level, most of these contractors, they actually access infrastructure work through subcontracting arrangements. And there is a lot of abuse and that happens in that particular area. Hence, we are looking at how best can we assist the CIDB to advise on how the subcontracting arrangements are regulated. On the question by Honourable Adams around the composition of the board, currently we have 13 members and 5 of those members are females. And insofar as what inputs the CIDB had on drafting of the Code of Conduct, I think I will respond to that by just mentioning the fact that perhaps the review, the current review of the Act that is currently taking place, is the one that is going to assist in terms of making sure that we have inputs from all stakeholders insofar as what the CIDB can or cannot do. But this also means that we need to make sure that such interventions by pieces of legislation have to be incorporated into the Act so that we avoid the issues that we've had where we are challenged by our code, which is not necessarily articulated in our legislation. On the issue, Honorable Adams, on the issue of why outsource the Secretariat services of the board, I think when it started, it was an issue around the fact that the organization was very small, and when it started growing, because initially we simply had an admin clerk that used to take minutes, and when the organization started growing, and because perhaps at the time in the structure there wasn't a company secretary, so to speak, the board then took a decision to look at an outsourced function. But the current board has discussed this matter and has agreed that it is one of the key responsibilities of the board that will need to be incorporated within the structure. But the board has also resolved to say that because we are undergoing the organizational redesign, let that process determine how the shape and the form and the level of this particular position, so that when it is resourced internally, it is informed through the process of the OG. On the issues around what was asked by Honorable Filzane on the Committee on Stakeholder Management, I think, Honorable, this particular committee is a new committee of the board. These new committees that we're referring to were brought about mainly by the assessment that was done and looking at that as well as the new strategy of the board. So they start being effective as from the 1st of September this year because of the need and the urgency to focus on the issues that are affecting us as the CIDB or as the industry. So the main functions around the stakeholder management would be to make sure that they oversee the kind of relationships and who we partner with as the CIDB, but predominantly to make sure that the partners that we bring on board are the partners that will assist us to be able to respond to our mandate. So focusing on issues of transformation and development as well as regulation. So we do believe that also at the center of this particular committee is to look at issues of communication, to look at issues of slow pace of transformation and whatnot, and who best we can deliver on these particular issues, and also to focus on issues of contractor development insofar as strategic interventions are concerned, and focusing predominantly on the partners that we look at. And if one then looks also at having a progressive contractor development program, what we currently have, and by our own admission in terms of the strategic discussions that we've had, we said some of our initiatives that we've put in place have not really yielded the kind of results that we wanted to see. For instance, in 2012, through the minister, we launched the National Contractor Development Plan. We still believe that it is one of the tools that was going to assist us to develop this industry. But the problem is the uptake by the client departments. And when I speak of client departments, I speak of both national, provincial, as well as local government. There is low uptake in terms of departments, municipalities, provincial government, and national to actually come up with contractor development programs that will assist these contractors to be able to be developed so that it also assists them to move up the ladder. Because we said when we talk and we speak of transformation, we need to focus on two things. And they speak to each other. It's not only about how many contractors have moved from one grade to the other, that is going up our register. But equally important is going to be how much of the contract have been awarded by the different spheres of government to individual grades, and who have those contracts been awarded to, so that we know and we can monitor how inclusive the issue of awards is taking place, because for us that would mean transformation is therefore taking place. So in terms of the new strategy that we are looking at, we are definitely focusing on issues of progressive contractor development. We also need to look at strategies of how do contractors that have emerged, how do they get out of the system, because you can't be emerging forever. There's new entrants, and you need to get to levels where you can sustain yourself and you are established, and then how best do you take others up the ladder. On the issues around the negative publicity of contractors, for us, it's basically, the meat will be in how we deliver on our strategy, and to show what changes, and that's why the board, in terms of its discussions, has focused mainly on the impact of our interventions as the CIDB, and not just to have off-the-shelf interventions where we develop strategies or we develop frameworks, and they just sit there and no one complies, and it's business as usual. We're focusing mainly on saying, if we come up with this intervention or with this initiative, what impact are we trying to make out there? So the four pillars have focused mainly on issues around the impact that we seek to achieve. I think, Chairperson, I've covered the rest of the questions, but perhaps before I move from the mic, is just to reiterate that this coming Sunday, we're having our provincial stakeholder liaison meeting, and it is here in the Western Cape, and it will be held at the Cape Town Lodge and Hotel Convention Centre, which is here in the city centre, and we are all welcome. It starts at 9. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Director Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to just respond to two questions. One is an enhancement to the question asked by Honorable Adams about the process for the appointment of boards and what do we do to check there. We appointed the boards in line with each entity's legislation. Unfortunately, all of them require that these boards are appointed by the minister. We put a transparent process of publishing for calls for nomination and invite people to apply, which then culminates into a process of an appointment of a selection panel by the minister and shortlisting and conducting of interviews and then recommend to suitable candidates. I mean, in the case of CIDB, when that happened for the replacement of the board, taking into account the one pair requirement, the gender split, for example, was originally 6-7. 7-6-7 men, 6 women, then one passed away and happened to be a woman. The point of replacement was that we experienced the problem that was taking place of the turmoil within the board. That resulted in the minister requesting the chairperson and the deputy chair. The chair was a woman, a member, and the deputy was a male member, to be removed as chair and deputy chair, and reappointed the current chair after going through a process of identifying a suitable candidate from his experience, etc. And therefore that meant we do not have any other vacancy. The idea that the minister and myself just consider was that we would want the chair to have a period of appointing himself and taking control of the board, and then when we do a media review, which is done after the end of September, we will submit the media performance. We'll then, in consultation, after consultation with myself and the chair, making an input, decide who is appropriate amongst the members of the current board to then be the deputy to deputize. So that process will take place in October, and then we'll have a deputy chair on that basis. We must note that is because this appointment had to be done midway through the board because of those problems. Thank you.
Thank you very much. any other edition. Before we give the honourable members another chance to engage, I was just going to ask that on one of the page 5, in regard to corruption and collusion, I just wanted to know that there are companies that were involved in collusion. Those found guilty of that, did you downgrade them or what's the position there?
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Certain billion pertain to Trinidad. That's absolute disaster for South Africa, especially in the tight economic times in which we live. May we ask the CIDB to go back and find out why so much money was unspent? They may not have the details now, but maybe in a certain area in Northwest, Limpopo, Eastern Cape, and so on, and what actions can be taken by whom to avert such a situation, because we could be looking at 26 million this very current, you know, financial year, if we don't take, you know, corrective steps. It's a painful story to hear. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Member Fiat.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. My first question here is about the women who are within this industry, for both the CDP and the department. I know in Limpopo where I come from, because of the women realizing that they were not given chance in most cases, they had to form themselves into the women in construction, something like that. I don't know if whether that structure is very national, but it is there in Limpopo. The main issue here was that they must be also be given chance. So I want to check, what are we doing to try and assist women in the construction industry to be able also to match their counterparts who are men? And what is the situation currently as far as women are concerned, especially from the blacks? And the issue of 30 million being retained is really disappointing. To realize that there are many contractors who are not given jobs, who would say I've got 2 years without being given any job, but we have got such a lot of money being retained. Indeed, it needs some form of, you know, investigation to check what is really the cause here.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Mattel.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just concerned regarding transformation, that the housing department want to review this CIDP, that was really, some of us, it doesn't work for us at all. We need something to be happened to accommodate all South African types of CIDP. And the second one is question of unemployment. We had a lot of unemployment. It really doesn't make sense for 30 million to go back, whereas we have a lot of people who are not working. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I see no further hands, so you had a chance to reply, folks.
Thank you, Chairperson. First one, to answer specifically to your question, none of the contractors in the collision saga have been downgraded. And that's basically, I think, predominantly around the South African law, that you are innocent until proven guilty. Now, our process is, again, going back to the issue of our Act and our regulations around issues of non-compliance by contractors, specifically around issues of collusion, is the mere fact that there is still, the process has not yet been finalized, means that we cannot sanction any of these contractors. We can't even suspend them from the register. And our legislation is such that even if we know today
that A contractor has done ABC, and if for as long as the investigation process as articulated in our legislation has not been done, we cannot take action against that particular contractor.
I think another perception, we must also tell the truth here. This whole collusion that happened, of course, I know the process we were dealing with this company that were involved in it. You know, when small contractors do things like that, we are quick to downgrade, as we explained. And when big companies behave and misbehave, the legislation does not give us, so I'm really just saying that when that process starts, I think we all ought to support it. It is not to punish anyone, it is to punish the people who are out of order. And when the small companies do that, we are quick to say they are corrupt and all these and all that. The other ones are just colluding. The truth is that they are thieves, these people. They are thieves stolen from the coffers of this country, you and I sitting here. We must deal with them, and deal with them decisively, but deal with them, obviously, in terms of the law, so that way we understand the law. Otherwise, you know, I'm in business myself. If left to our own device, we'll do funny things out there, very quickly. So we do need that framework so that we can begin to have an industry where those who want to invest can invest knowing that their money will be safe and they'll get returns. And then we can start to begin to develop our own people in a manner in which a CIDP's regulator will start to play a really central role that requires the respect that we are bringing to the CIDP's regulator. We are going to do that. But we do need a lot of help from the honorable members and the other partners. Thank you.
Yeah, thank
you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want clarity here. According to the information that was given to the committee, it clearly says that 9 out of 11 companies, there was a settlement that was reached of 229 million. That was the settlement. So what happened to that money? Because my worry is, it's like we were so quick to come with settlement rather than to discipline the people. Like the chairperson really says here, which means you can get away with murder as long as you have money you can pay. You are not going to go to jail. That is the situation that I picked up here. If maybe they can tell what happened to that money.
Thank you, honourable member. Madam?
Okay, if I may, thank you. And maybe let me just respond to this by going back to the issue of the collusion and the downgrading of contractors. If you recall what I explained in terms of the criteria that we use to downgrade contractors, I can assure you that all the contractors in the collusion saga would not be downgraded. Because we look at Hanover. We look at capital. We look at what's the largest award you've received in the last 5 years. And they would have ticks in all those areas. So this is why, in terms of the strategy, there is focus on the issues around registration. And at the center of this is the criteria for registration. Because if things like these, if you look at the 9... functions that are available to CIDB. That is why you will then get to the question that you are asking, Honourable Govan, to say, at the end of the day, perhaps sometimes when things like this happen, and this happens every day because it's in the nature of the work that we do, where we investigate issues of non-compliance and so forth, and most of the time what we do is we fine. And what does our legislation say currently? Says you can't find more than 100,000. Now you equate that to what the transgression is. It just doesn't add up. Which is why for us it is very critical that our legislation is reviewed
and it begins to give us the kind of teeth that a regulator like us needs to have. The issues around the settlements that have been paid, I think we just need to recall that the CIDB has not necessarily been paid any settlement figures or any settlement amounts, but the settlements that have been paid thus far, insofar as collusion is concerned, are those that the fines that were charged by the Competition Commission. And simply because our processes have not been finalized. They've challenged in court and so forth, and we're going through those processes. The issue around, yes, the issue we are engaging with Treasury, and I just want to mention around the issues of underspending 13 billion on infrastructure that went back to Treasury. This is partly some of the reasons, one of the reasons that have led to Treasury coming up with the procurement reforms that they have introduced as from this year, as they include infrastructure spending as well. And that's why they are working closely with us. So one of the things that we are discussing, as I said, we're working very closely, and we have identified the National Treasury is the main strategic partner for us to be able to transform this industry and come up with meaningful developmental initiatives that are going to change the status quo. If one looks at the underspending by all spheres of government, but predominantly local government, because that's where most of these the money that has been returned comes from. If you look at the client competence standards, we need to begin to see the departments that are tasked with the responsibility of delivering infrastructure in this country, are they competent enough to be able to deliver? So that we start assessing, and this is just one of the things we are discussing, to say perhaps we need to look at other ways of delivering infrastructure. Whether we look at awarding more funding to those kind of departments that seem to be delivering, because I can assure you there are departments or municipalities or provincial governments that are delivering, that are using the money. But there are those who are actually failing, which is why it leads to issues. But the main thing is issues around planning, which is why they end up not spending. So if we are to have a different mechanism in terms of how we deliver on infrastructure in this country, we also need, as the CIDB, to come up with a mechanism of how those that cannot deliver are going to be assisted. Because we believe that infrastructure is one of the key elements that is going to assist the economy of this country to grow. On the issues around women contractors, yes, the organization SAWIC, which is the South African Women in Construction, it still exists. And one of the things that we've identified in terms of our strategy under the pillar of development is to focus on developmental programs that will not only focus on issues of transformation at large, but will start focusing on specific areas like women development initiatives, youth development initiatives, as well as initiatives for disabled contractors. Those are the things that the pillar around development, and in particular the committee that's going to focus on issues of regulatory compliance will look at, because ours as a CIDB is to come up with policies and standards and so forth that we are going to have to impose on the public sector to comply with, so that we are able to address these specific areas. And then on the issue of transformation and how the CIDB Act is currently not assisting us to address issues of transformation, which in one way or the other has led also to the issues of underspending and the unemployment given by the fact that money is being returned to Treasury. One of the things that we are looking at are issues of the capacity of government to deliver. And this is why we are looking at the competence standards of clients. So it's not only the issues around the fact that
what you currently have in departments, national, provincial, as well as municipalities, what you currently have, you have a procurement official in a department that buys pens, being the same procurement official that deals with infrastructure procurement that needs to be separated. And also, just the department as a whole, its capacity to deliver on infrastructure projects. So we are focusing on all of those things, working closely with Treasury, so that we minimize the kind of return in terms of the budget that goes back to Treasury because of underspending. I thank you, Chairperson.
Madam, thank you very much. Any further input? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, we've concluded the answers. I just want to spend a minute giving you an overview of the Department of Public Works approach to CIDD and the rest of our entities. The CIDD is a mode of delivery for the Department of Public Works in the area in which it operates. So as a department, we have a very deliberate approach to the manner in which we oversee the functioning of the entity. We have a policy framework in place that guides our oversight and governance of CIDB as well as our other public entities. I think that DG started the appointment process, which culminates in our seeking concurrence from Cabinet. But as a whole, I just like to make mention of the fact that the CIDB as well as the other entities are very closely aligned to what the department does. And in particular, one would see that they participate in our Lehotla, the Minister's policy statement, is something that gives them direction as well. In recent times, the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation has given the national department the sole custody of overseeing the planning processes in public entities. So this is something we do within our governance section in the department, and we ensure that the planning processes within our entities, including the IDB, are in compliance with the government plan framework and is properly aligned to what we wish to see them doing going forward in terms of their mandate, the National Development Plan, medium-term strategic framework, as well as the priorities of the minister. So there's a close alignment between themselves and ourselves in terms of what they do. And going forward from there, we also have engagements with them at least once in the quarter, where they're required to present their quarterly performance reports to the department to ensure that they're meeting their targets, and we maintain a very close oversight of the problems in the entities. What I'd like to say is that what has transpired in recent times is that the Minister has commissioned the signing of shareholder contracts with the public entities. Shareholder contracts are a requirement in terms of the Treasury regulations. However, they only apply to Schedule 2, 3B and 3D public entities. So in our circumstances, it will only be compelling or an obligation to engage in a shareholder contract with the IDT, given the nature of their scheduling. However, on a voluntary basis, the ministers also formalize shareholder contracts for the CBE, CIDP, and AGMA. So we have shareholder contracts, and what this is designed to do is to strengthen the relationship between the department, the minister, as well as our entities, and compel the minister and entities to meet certain obligations and to engage each other at certain intervals throughout the year. Now, Chairperson, what I'd like to say is that these quarterly review meetings are very important to us. And what we find is that there's a greater alignment to a common sense of purpose between our public entities and the department. So the close engagement between our entities, the minister and the department, and also a new dynamic engagement between the various branches within the department that relate to the specific mandate of the entities. By way of example, we find that our policy branch and our construction branch would have close alliance or relationship with the CIDB, given the nature of the CIDB's mandate. Now, Chairperson, I just want to conclude by saying that in terms of interventions by the department, we neglected to say in our earlier contribution when the minister took decisive steps to remove the chairperson and deputy chairperson at the CIDB, to take the DG of the Department of Public Works that he appointed as an acting chairperson of the CIDB. And within the short period of time, the DG was able to stabilize the CIDB prior to the appointment of the new chairperson. So I'd like to add that point. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any further comments, members?
Fola. Honorable Satan. Okay. Good folks, we'll have to check on your progress and then see how things develop there. If we've got cause to call you to come and give us an update, we'll do so. For today, this is how far we can go. We'd like to thank you for your time and the presentation that you've made. Thank you very much. Okay. So, members, looking at it. Thank you.